Here at the UBC Ant Club, we just like to talk about ants and compare ant farms. It's really cool.
Paperclip Club is all about, well, paperclips mostly.
At Blah Club, you can blah blah, blah 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 blah.
Explosion!
There's only one club worth joining at UBC, and that's CITR 101.9 FM. We got free tickets to shows, whirly pops, professional help in all types of audio engineering, passes to festivals, crazy parties, live band swag. All types of crazy people. Our programming manager rides a motorcycle. There's freestyle rapping, Nardwar the Human Serviette, the vinyl and record libraries, Discorder magazine, free studio recording, and it sure beats the hell out of Paperclip Club, which is a thing that I just made up because I work at
CITR.
So come check us out on the floor of the Student Union Building. We got all types of crazy shit for you to do. Or check us out online at www.citr.ca.
Embology 101 is a student-run organization here to educate the public about the benefits of hemp and cannabis. Fast fact! Hemp is a renewable, sustainable source of food and fiber. Fast fact! Your body contains anandamide, which is part of the same family of substances as THC. To learn more, look us up on Facebook at www.facebook.com/groups/hempology101UBC or come to one of our great events. And don't forget, legalization through education.
But what are kings when regiment is gone? But perfect shadows in a sunshine day. UBC Theater and Film presents Edward II by Christopher Marlowe, September 29th to October 15th at the Telus Studio Theater in the Chan Center. For tickets, visit theaterfilm.ubc.ca or call 604-822-2678. Monarch. Prisoner. Corpse.
Hello, hello, hello. You're listening to the CITR 101.9 FM from unceded Musqueam territory at UBC Vancouver. My name is Simon Welton, and coming up in the next half hour is, as always, the White Noise Show. It's a half hour of sketch comedy followed by the White Noise After Show, this week hosted by myself and featuring special friend slash guest or whatever he wants to be called, Connor Neckleport, who joins me now. How you doing, mate?
Yeah, doing well, man. How are you?
Ah, not bad, not bad, not bad. It's Wednesday, so, you know.
About to get drenched in a rainstorm, so the
apparently the apocalypse is coming to Vancouver tonight via the Weather Channel.
Yeah, they're great. I love listening to the apocalypse. You've got a lot of good albums, actually.
Yeah, so if you're hunkering down now and fearing for your mortality, just relax.
I'm kind of the one that has the kind of the rain intro.
Sorry?
The apocalypse song that has a kind of the rain intro.
Which
followed by the lightning.
Which, are you just...
Thunder.
Can you name it, or are you just vaguely
describing it? No, I can't remember the name, but it's...
Well, that's nice. That was
it's a good one, yeah.
Thanks for adding that.
Scares me.
Great. So, yes, don't despair if you're worried about the weather, because if you're going to die, it's nothing you can do about it anyway. And just sit there and relax and listen to a bit of sketch comedy.
Really, really untoasted grilled cheese.
Yeah, no, you don't make bad grilled cheese. Order pizza. Let him shit his pants as he drives to your house in the horrible weather.
And then don't get your food because he hasn't arrived.
Just tip him. If you don't tip him, you're a knobhead. Like, you've got to tip him if he's coming in the weather.
Why would you not tip him regularly?
Well, I'm just saying, like, you know, maybe you live right around the corner and you're like, I know he gets $5 per pizza, so really... And he's you know, he's always got them upside down, and he doesn't use the heat bag, and he puts the dips in the heat bag, and he puts the pops in the heat bag, so fuck him. But tonight you pay him, even if he sticks your drinks in the heat bag, he deserves it.
Yeah,
right?
Just don't order drinks. Be safe.
Order a 2 liter. You can't put that in the heat bag. That's the secret. All right. Enough pizza advice. I think it's time for some white noise.
Warning. The following programming contains adult subject matter and some strong language. It is a work of satirical fiction. All characters and advertisements are completely fabricated. Listener discretion is advised.
Welcome to another episode of White Noise. I'm your host, Richard Blackmore, and tonight's episode is brought to you in part by
Hillary Clinton for president. Because if you vote for Trump now, you're officially an asshole. First up tonight, someone saving the day.
Seconds, Dan.
I'm nearly there. Just have to access the hard drive remotely, write in the command sequence.
Hurry up, or all those people will be dead.
10 seconds.
I'm in. All right, now the script.
5 seconds.
I'm nearly there. Nearly there. And done.
Zero. Well done.
Oh, shit. Caps lock was on. I once tried hacking into a computer. It didn't work. Apparently, you're not meant to use an axe. Next up tonight, Carla Neal are back.
Remember when we used to live in a real house?
Hey, I know it's not like the most comfiest ambulance, but it sure beats that skip we spent Christmas in.
Oh, yeah. I like that skip. Smelt like my mum's house.
Remember the first time I came to your house when we were like 9?
9? I've always been a 10.
9 years old. And when were you a 10?
That's what my mum says I am.
Well, she's an alcoholic, isn't she? Everyone looks a 10 when you're drunk. Anyway, do you not remember the first time we hung out?
No. Did we have sex?
No. That was well later. We went nicking.
Oh, well, that makes a nice change. Mum's still at work. She had an early shift at the strippers.
Your mum's a stripper?
No, she cleans the bathrooms. She did try stripping once and she made 50 quid. Someone paid her to put her clothes back on.
Has she got any booze we can have?
Nah, or she would have drank it.
Oh, is she an alcoholic?
No, she says she's just a really thirsty person.
Well, we could go nick some from the corner shop, you know, celebrate your birthday properly.
Yeah, it's not every day you turn 12. I deserve a beer. So how are we going to do this?
Easy. I distract the bloke working, you shove a bottle of voddy up your jumper and quietly leave.
What's voddy?
Vodka.
Bless you.
Shut up, you tit.
That's a bit harsh. Do you always have to talk to people like that?
You just seem to have that effect on me. Anyway, just grab whatever, as long as it has alcohol in it.
Got it.
Good afternoon, proprietor of this shop.
Neil, why aren't you at school?
All right, Dad.
Have you been caught peeping in the changing rooms again?
No.
I told you if you keep staring, other guys are going to hit you.
Nah, me and Carl just fancy taking a break.
Who's Carl?
You know, the one whose mum's a slapper.
Oh, right, the slow kid that always pees in the garden.
Yeah, his mum says he isn't ready for the inside toilets yet.
Jesus.
Ah, he's not so bad, like, you know, he's...
Sorry!
Oh, shit, run!
Oi, you little shits!
What did you get?
I got a big bottle.
Nice.
Of Listerine.
What? Well, that'll have to do.
It can't be that bad. It's what my grandma drinks when no one's looking.
I've never drank Listerine. I've never brushed my teeth either. Next up tonight is an interview.
Good evening. I'm Bram Stoker, filling in for Brad Stoker. And tonight is Creepy Conversations. Tonight I'm joined by a special guest, the Loch Ness Monster. Good evening, Mr. Monster.
Call me Nessie.
Okay. Well, Nessie, tell me, what's an average day like for you?
Well, it's quite mundane. I get up, complain about the rain, go for a swim, flash a few tourists, and it's off to the pub for a long lunch.
Do you intentionally get sighted?
Aye, the Scottish Government's been giving me backhanders for that for years. If it wasn't for me and the ghost hunting Edinburgh Castle, all Scotland would have to attract tourists is deep-fried Mars bars, scurvy, and Susan Boyle, all of which can lead to a very early death.
What about the beautiful scenery?
Oh, yeah, because you can't get that anywhere else. Hills and grass are so fucking rare.
Point taken. Does it not get boring hanging out in the same lock all the time?
Nah, I've been here 1,000 years and it suits me fine. I've got all the fish I can eat and the best whiskey in the world.
Ah, yes, there are lots of good distilleries in the Highlands to shop at, I suppose.
No, I make my own. Much stronger, made of grains, yeast and lighter fluid. Oh, gives it a nice kick. What, you want to try some?
Yeah, go on then. Oh, wow, it smells like paint thinner.
Aye, the secret ingredient.
Perhaps not, then.
Fine, stick to your girly drinks.
Nessie, where did you originate from? Is there more of you?
Well, I'm half English, quarter Welsh, and a quarter Diplodocus. But don't tell anyone around here, because that'd be bad for business.
Don't you find that a little dishonest?
Well, all culture is a sham anyway. I mean, the kilt's English, the Mars bar's from Slough, and our heroes are played by Mel Gibson.
Oh dear, I never knew.
It ain't just a Scottish problem, and basically all European cuisine before colonization was turnip soup and the meat of the least good-looking of your children.
Yes, that would make for awkward dinner conversation. Could you pass your brother, please? Do you have any relatives still alive?
Just a cousin who lives in Vegas and a distant uncle you might have heard of. He's semi-famous. Do you know Godzilla? Big bloke, bit of a temper, not afraid to tread on a few toes or faces.
Yes, I think I have heard of him.
You should have him on here. Loads of great stories from the war.
He was in Iraq?
No, Japan versus Godzilla.
Oh, yes, well, maybe we could fit him in.
Actually, never get in here.
Well, perhaps at a squeeze.
Better not try. He's a bit sensitive about his weight.
All right, so are you just going to continue living in that lock indefinitely?
Well, I did the travel thing. I backpacked around Asia, swam the Amazon. Don't do that, by the way. I got a nasty infection somewhere you don't want to know. And I even met the Dalai Lama. Well, I think I did, but I was off my tits. It could have just been another bald guy in a sheet.
That does sound like a full life, but you never settled down with a wife?
No, the nearest I got was a 6-month relationship with a Canadian called Ogopogo, but it didn't work out.
How come?
She didn't like me drinking, and I didn't like her face.
Well, that's not very nice.
Fine, she left me. I miss her every day. Is that what you want to hear, you short bastard?
I'm 5'11".
I'm 16'7". Want to compare cocks next?
No.
I didn't think so.
Well, we have time for one more question, and my producer is waving at me in an attempt to get me to steer the conversation away from colossal cocks. So, Nessie, as a relatively older creature in the world who has seen it change over the years, what are your thoughts on where the world's going now?
Well, laddie, the longer you live, the longer you realize people are basically all the same. Their needs are basic. Their squabbles are similar, and at the end of the day, I'd rather live in a lock alone than spend even one more minute with the rest of you.
Thank you, Nessie. Join us again next week for more creepy conversations.
I never been to Scotland, but I gather it's basically England, but with even worse food. Next up tonight, we attend Trump University.
Good afternoon. I'm your professor, Dr. Patsy, and today we begin a unit about women in the workplace. Please, don't laugh. All right, open your textbooks to page 54, and Alan, you begin reading, please.
Okay.
Aloud, Alan, to the class.
Oh, right. Sorry. Chapter 10, Business Bras. Sometimes we run out of guys, so we gotta get chicks to do guy stuff.
Yeah.
You can hire whoever you want, but if you get hot chicks, you can pay them less, because everyone knows hot chicks are dumb. Also, you can't make them dress hot, but you can suggest it a lot.
Stop there. Okay, discussion. Yeah, you.
I thought this section was kind of...
brilliant? Enlightening?
No, sexist.
Sexist? How?
with the hiring only pretty women thing?
Yeah, that's not sexist. It's ugliest.
Yeah, that's not allowed either.
Yeah, it is. Have you ever been to a restaurant?
Whatever. The guy who wrote this book is a misogynistic asshole.
I am not an asshole.
Oh, I thought Trump wrote it.
He just likes to draw the pictures.
I never went to university. Instead, I wasted 4 years getting drunk at home. And now, we are venturing into new waters of lighter entertainment. The following segment is from the popular Australian radio game show, Tear Factor. Enjoy.
Back to Tear Factor, the show where couples make each other cry for big cash prizes. I'm your host, David Smiley, and tonight's contestants are Gaynor and Kyle from Perth, and Shauna and Travis from Adelaide. Welcome to all four of you. Great to have you with us. So, Kyle, a little birdie tells me you recently got some great news.
Did I?
Yes, that's what my cue card says.
Oh, right, yeah, I didn't realise I told the research about that.
No problem. Let's hear about it.
Well, there was this guy that used to bully me in school, and I recently found out he had incurable cancer.
That wasn't it, Carl.
What?
That wasn't what we told you to talk about.
Oh, right, yeah, silly me. Yeah, I remember now. What you told me to say was I just got a new promotion at work.
Great. And what's your new position?
Well, you know the guy that on movie sets who holds the boom microphone?
Yes.
I hold his bag.
Okay, moving on. Gaynor, what do you do for a living?
I'm a prostitute.
Oh, really? I'm guessing you're not very expensive.
Wait. I'm in prosecutor, not a prostitute. Oh, my goodness. Silly me. I'm always doing that, getting my words mixed up in court.
My last assumption still stands. Anyway, over to our other pair, and we have ourselves a bomb. That's right. Travis, I hear you're a limey git.
What?
Apparently, you're originally from Bath, England.
No.
Oh?
No, I was born in a bath, but that was in Melbourne.
Fabulous. And finally, Shauna, what do you do for fun?
Well, I'm a typical Aussie girl, so of course I like to have a drink.
A girl after my own heart, Shauna. And what's your favourite stiff one?
Well, you go through phases, don't you? But right now, I'd say it's probably a goat's blood sunrise.
Oh, I've not had that cocktail. What's in it?
It's 2 shots of vodka, 1 shot of tequila, and 1/2 pint of goat's blood.
Brilliant. I will have to try it right after I strangle my researcher. Join us after these messages for round one of Tear Factor. Tear Factor is brought to you in part by Kenny's Koalas, chlamydia free since 1993, and also the Army. Join us. It's like Call of Duty, but this time you get to shoot the 12-year-olds. Welcome back to Tear Factor, the show where your partner's tears can be worth more than their organs. Travis, Shauna, Kyle, Gaynor are in position wearing the Tear Factor patented face gear.
Aren't these just swimming goggles?
Shut up, Kyle. The rules are simple. You have 1 minute to make either of you cry more than the other team. Travis and Shauna will go first because I am far more attracted to that couple. So, are you ready, guys?
As we will ever be.
Okay, on your marks, go.
Okay, Shauna, remember I love you, but this is for the new TV, the new car, and your heart surgery, okay?
Okay.
My God, you look like your mother. Everyone said you would do eventually, but Christ, Shauna, it's like you melted. Nice one. I mean, seriously, what are we going to talk about something besides PTA meetings? And what happened outside school when you picked up the kids? Who cares? And another thing, tell your idiot brother that he can't live in my caravan any longer. I don't care that your dad was a bastard. He's dead, Shauna.
A valid effort from you two there. Well done. That might be hard to beat. You can stop crying now, Shauna.
Oh, no.
Gaynor and Carl, are you ready?
You bet we are.
Okay, on your marks, go.
Okay, Gaynor, I find your constant wearing of dungarees annoying. I wish you would chew more quietly. Your sister is perhaps slightly more attractive than you. Your bum could be smaller.
Come on, Kyle, it's not working. Try harder. It's for the money. For that new sewing machine you really want.
All right, shut up. My friends are watching. I got one. I shagged Elizabeth.
No.
Yeah, that's right. Your cousin, yeah. And it was amazing. She knew stuff I'd only seen written on bathroom walls.
Well, I shagged your brother Mike.
What?
That's right. I've been seeing him for a year.
Gaynor? I was making it up to win the game. But you... I knew you were banging Mike, you bitch. Can't believe it.
I'm sorry. You just got so fat and boring.
That's time! Well, that was a close game, but Carl just tipped the scales there with that flood of despair at the last second, giving him and Gaynor the win. Congratulations, guys!
Commiserations to Shauna and Travis, but don't worry, no one leaves here empty-handed. You both get a week's free marriage counselling, courtesy of Tear Factor. This is all we have time for this week. Join us again for more Tear Factor. Good night.
Fabulous content from down under there. And that was brought to you in part by Stevenson's Elective Gastric Bypass Surgery. There for you when you give up. First up tonight is an interview with reclusive folk artist John in Hiding.
Good evening. You're listening to Folky Folks, and I'm Hannah Stout. My guest tonight is folk legend and infamous agoraphobe, John in Hiding. Hello, John.
Greetings, Hannah.
So, John, why have you suddenly come back to civilization?
Well, since the tragic loss of my wife, I've just felt so alone. Something had to change. I hit rock bottom when I spent my entire rent check on webcam porn.
I hear those can be quite addictive.
Yeah, tell me about it. I mean, I spent a fortune on equipment for my room, and I barely made a penny.
So, the new album is influenced heavily by the loss of your wife.
Oh, hugely. I mean, every track is haunted by the presence of her ghost. We just couldn't get it out of the sound booth.
Let's play a segment of one of those tracks now. This is John in Hiding with And Now You're Dead.
I am sorry you are dead. I shouldn't have sat on your head. I should have listened when you said, hey, that's my hair. And now you're dead. I should have looked before I said, but I didn't. Now you're a flat, and so is the cat.
Powerful stuff.
Yeah, I actually broke down making that track 3 times.
Really?
Yeah, my car's fucking useless.
But it must have also been emotionally draining.
Oh, it was. Repairs cost me a fortune.
But, I mean, the loss of your wife must have been taxing.
Oh, yeah, horrendously so. She was my soulmate. I mean, we were a near-perfect match on eHarmony.
You must miss her a lot.
I think about her all the time. Every time I sit down.
What are your plans now that you've completed the album?
Well, there's really 3 options. Go on tour, continue with my webcam show, or kill myself.
I think that's a bit extreme, John.
I know. I'll never crack the webcam show market.
Well, the best of luck to you. That's all the time we...
Can I give a shout out, please?
Sure.
For those who were wondering, my webcam username is LongJohnThePegger, all one word.
Oh, it's a pirate theme?
No.
I should have listened when you said, hey, that's my hair, and now you're dead.
I've never understood the appeal of the webcam shows. I mean, what's the point of watching naked people if you're not surrounded by a bar full of drunk perverts? Next up tonight, women are talking.
Damn, check out the ass on him. I'd like to leave him sore in the morning.
Yeah, very spankable.
Hey, buddy, nice dong. What time does it stand to attention?
Pardon?
She wants to know if you're hungry because she has something for you to chow down on.
She's inviting me to dinner?
Sure, she'll buy you dinner. But then you have to eat pie for dessert.
And you owe her breakfast.
Nah, sleeping over is for pussies, right, my ladies?
Yeah!
Yeah! Woo!
Hell yeah! Once I'm done, I'm out of there. Tinder waits for no woman, am I right? Yeah!
Can I go home now?
No need to get so uptight, dude. We're just joking around. It's what chicks do. You just don't get it because you're a man.
Now, really, I find this objectification and disregard for my qualities besides my looks very unsettling. Just because these jeans make my ass look fantastic doesn't give you the right to talk about me like I'm a vacuous sex object.
Oh, shut up and go put up a shelf.
Oh, that's right. Walk away. Go do something useful and open me a pickle jar, you tease.
It's tough being white and male. There's just too many advantages to choose from. That's the end of our show. Join us again for more White Noise.
White Noise was written and directed by Simon Welton, starring the voice talents of Connor Neckleput, Caitlin Docking, Sierra Wiley, and Simon Welton.
Guest writing by Connor Neckleput.
All right, there you go. That was another episode of the White Noise Show. I hope you enjoyed that. If you want to keep up with us throughout the week, check us out on Twitter and Facebook at White Noise UBC. You can also email in your comments and thoughts on the show at whitenoiseubc@gmail.com. And you can even check out the best of White Noise at whitenoisecomedy.podbean.com. So, Connor, how was that for you?
Bit of a throwback.
At the end there, a couple, yeah.
Old sketches.
Yeah.
It's always fun to reflect on them and see how the writing style substance has changed over time.
Yeah, kind of only wrote half a show this week, but that was cool.
It's great, Thanksgiving. You only had an extra day.
Yeah. it was all that extra time. It got away from me. But, the first few, I enjoyed the very first sketch. Was probably, even though it was the shortest, it was probably...
Yeah, it was punchy. I liked it. It was not quite what you expected. It had a good thing to... a good comment, a good observation to say about, these typical crime dramas and all that kind of business.
Even, I think, the editing took me longer than the rest of the sketches.
Yeah, probably, yeah.
Because I was trying to make all these, faraway explosions and screaming. But, yeah, cool. All right, should we play some music? And then we'll... come back and I guess do some chit chat.
Yeah, let's do it. I think we've got some killer tracks on here this evening.
I've got some good stuff to talk about this week.
Oh, if you want to listen to music, let's not then.
Well, I'm just saying afterwards. I'm previewing. because yes, there's, as you may have noticed, there's quite a lot going on. South of the border especially.
Mexico?
Yeah, not that far south. Maybe New Mexico. But yeah, we'll get more into that after some music. So first up tonight, we're going to play something brand new. We're going to play a band called Sun Club. And this first track is called Summer Feet.
I'm
Chicks.
There you go. That was Douse with Cave In there off their new album, The Light In You Has Left. And, of course, before that was Sun Club with Summer Feet kicking off the show. So, yes, I'm joined in the studio on the White Noise After Show by Sierra Wiley and Connor Neckleput. How are you guys doing?
Doing very well. Staying out of the rain.
There you
well,
go.
Well, since I told you I was good earlier, I've actually gone down really downhill. Yeah. Like, now I'm awful.
Yeah.
Just listening to that show just makes me want to stop listening to it.
And you?
I know, it's hearing your own voice, isn't it, Connor? It's quite grating.
No, mine's fine. I really just can't.
My Scottish accent was appalling this week, but
it wasn't too bad.
Yeah, there was a couple of moments.
It wasn't Mike Myers, but...
What, that bad?
Grab a long lunch at the pub.
But anyway, let's move on to the real stuff. So, yes, I think, you know, we can't ignore what's going on and the big topics of this week, which, of course, is the second debate. But really what led up to that second debate, which started with on Friday, the release of the now infamous Trump tapes, where him and Billy Bush were bantering, I'm saying that in inverted commas here, on their little, their sex assault bus or whatever you want to call it. And they had a little chit chat and it was all hot mic'd. And so, yeah, NBC waited till now, which was kind of weird that they waited, like, you know, because obviously they must have known these tapes were there for quite a while. Like, it's.
Wasn't it the Washington Post released it and they wanted to do it at a time that would, like, it would cause the most damage? I saw a reason in the.
Yeah,
it now.
I mean, it's. But it's just. Yeah, it's interesting. Yeah, I guess it wouldn't have. Maybe they really did plan it. But anyway.
That's actually really interesting if you want to. I mean, please continue.
Yeah,
with that.
Yeah.
As a tweet to itself. Is a really interesting media ethics.
Yeah, well, it comes down to they're just blatantly saying this time they don't want the Republicans to win, because in the past, many of the newspapers and other media outlets have been very impartial. And it is curious that this time there's been so many examples that USA Today have never backed anyone. And this time they were like, no, we've got to say how we feel because this is ridiculous. It's beyond comprehension, and yet I hear so much hate and just like nasty words towards Hillary coming out from people.
It's insane
that it's just this blindness. They're like they don't care if he was Hitler, as long as it's not Hillary, that's fine in their eyes. Like there's no argument to them that can be made about anything. But anyway, that's not.
And they're the percent they're going to lose the election. So
yeah, because. Logic doesn't apply, so why at this point you're like, why even bother wasting my breath? But anyway,
it doesn't make you wonder why there are even debates anymore.
Yeah,
it's just exasperating, right? Because there's like, it's not arguing from a logical standpoint, it's just like Trump can say literally whatever he wants. The worse he gets, the more kind of support and riled up these people get. But then you've got Hillary actually trying to argue policy, and then this just insane fight of anti-intellectualism and hatred and. Ugh.
Well, they would ask him questions, and he would just turn around and say nasty things about Hillary.
And ISIS. We got to defeat ISIS.
But he didn't even say how. He just.
Yeah. He's got secret plans, duh.
I wouldn't possibly tell you how to do it.
I wouldn't tell my own generals.
Yeah.
But he's got the general support, and, you know.
Do you think he goes into, like, job interviews? Not that he's ever actually had to get a job, but they were like, so, tell us, what would you do for our company? He's like, well, I would make you millions. I'd make you millions, I would. Right, but how would you do that? Well, I can't tell you. You haven't hired me yet. Like, you've got to hire me,
I'll tell you my plan. I would almost go, fair enough, that one.
Well, no, because that's a job interview. If you've ever done, like, a real, for a real job, like, they also, ask what are you going to do?
Yeah, well, you wouldn't bill it as I want to make millions. It's like, oh, I have several ideas. I think that could make the company more efficient.
I mean, we're not arguing what a logical person, what someone who's trying to get a job would want to say. We're arguing with someone who's had...
But that's what he's doing. He's applying for the job of president, is what he's doing right now. But in his interview, he won't tell us what he's going to do, which has never been done.
And the people who would vote him in are not the qualified leaders that they should be.
Yeah. There's a reason that prior to, like, the 1600s, democracy was, like, a terrible idea to most people. They were like, no, that's ridiculous. Like, most people aren't educated, so giving them the vote would be a terrible idea. But anyway, what we're going to really talk about is the Trump tapes. And the reason we want to talk about this, even though I know it's been, everyone's analyzed and we've talked about them, but it really irked me to hear people like Scott Barrio and even Nigel Farage from the other side of the scummy pond.
Is he even alive on the other side of the scummy pond?
No,
he's the
UKIP interim leader again.
Did he just fade into a little...
They tried to replace him and she lasted about 2 seconds, his replacement. Oh. But anyway, so all these scummy guys are basically trying to defend Trump by saying that this is how all guys talk and You know, the way he was talking on the bus, well, that's just how men are. And the first thing I thought when I heard this was, fuck you, mate. No, seriously, fuck you. Because how dare you? How dare anybody ever say about any thought process that this is how all people think? Because you don't know how anybody else thinks. So you don't have a right to actually say that about anyone unless you have data to back it up. And the second thing is that it is such a despicable thought that, because basically what he's saying is every man has thoughts about raping women, and that is fucked up and not true. And also it normalizes the idea that it's okay to have thoughts about assaulting women. And yeah, like, what? I mean, maybe it's a generational thing, and maybe old men do have rapey thoughts about women. But most guys that I like interact with and I know, I've never heard that sort of talk. Like, that's the thing. It's not common. It's preposterous. This whole idea that men talk in these rapey ways is something they're saying to back the fact that they did this. It's not because it's true, because it really isn't. And I'm really worried that women will listen to shit like that and believe them, and that scares me.
That's exactly what I think the worst part is, because, like, I can say from my position, like, oh, I know a lot of great men like you guys, and I can say that that is not the way that all men think. And then you have people, like, coming out. There was an NFL star who's like, hey, I've been in NFL locker rooms for 8 years, and I can tell you for a fact that's not how anyone talks, and if they do, they would be out of the team so quickly. But I am scared for the people who go, oh, okay, Trump is saying that's the way that, you know, that's kind of how all men think. And because I've kind of grown up in this cycle of abuse or normalizing this sexual kind of verbal aggression, then they start to think that that's how it's supposed to be and that they don't need change and that someone should repeal the 19th Amendment, a.k.a. Trump supporters who believe that women should not have the right to vote. It's just like the crazy misogyny that's going on in this election is just madness.
It's an interesting idea because it really drives home the idea of
what women not being allowed to vote is an interesting idea.
No, please don't put words in my mouth. The Trump tapes really sort of drive home the idea of sort of like rape culture, right? And that's the idea that sexual assault, something amongst predominantly men, is normalized through exposure to these kinds of discussions and this kind of talk and this kind of
chat. Well, no, but
what I'm getting at though is that what you've just said, you've just come out, and I totally agree with you. I've never heard anyone talk so disparagingly about women, about like how to rape and sexually assault women. It's horrific. So I've never experienced that, and so have you. Is that a refutation for that kind of idea of a rape culture?
Well, exactly. I would say, because you could argue that. You could argue what you said. But I think if you could equally argue the fact that so many people have had such a shock reaction to this prove that the idea of a rape culture is not really what is going on, and that it's more a psychological problem. And there's 10 to 20% of men who obviously are like pathological, like emotion issues, and that they don't empathize with people or understand how horrendously like damaging and disturbing something like that could be to do to someone, and how they could possibly live with themselves for doing such a thing. That is not something that most normal, like at least in our sense of normal sort of minds, can cope with and live with and would want to do to anybody and would, you know, believe that is the way to act. Like that, it requires you to dehumanize other people, and that is not how most people behave and think. But it's interesting because the idea of the rape culture, I think one thing we always have to remember when discussing this is that just like the arguments perpetuated with the misconceptions of intimate partner violence, and what I'm talking about there is what is also known as domestic violence. And I've looked at metadata for that, and lots of research has looked at metadata for that. And in the popular media in North America, they paint the picture that it is usually men being very violent towards, you know, women who don't defend themselves, and it's a very one-sided thing, and it happens very common. And if you look at actual data on it, and the reason that that narrative suits people to talk about is because it sells magazines to women. If you can talk about things like this, and you know, it sells media to women. It's a very
you know, it touches people very personally and it has a lot of power. So it is a very, you know, it does. There are reasons why people would perpetuate that if it's not true.
And it's kind of untouchable a bit as well.
Yeah,
right?
And who would argue against it? But if you look at the metadata, and I'm talking about, this is a class I took, taught by one of the leading domestic violence, intimate partner violent researchers. And what we got shown was a huge amount of metadata research, which proved that it is typically a bilateral thing. And it's typically something that two people will do to each other, and not in a particular, even a particularly violent manner. It will be the most typical form of domestic or intimate partner violence is people sort of lightly pushing, hitting, slapping each other, but not causing bruising or cuts or bleeding or lasting damage. It's you know, or it's light hitting, and it's usually bilateral. And then one of the most common ones is actually women hitting men who aren't defending themselves, and they get very hurt. But of course, then there are examples. Of course, there are of men hitting women in a unilateral fashion. But the point is that it occurs actually in about 10 to 15% of relationships, not in more than that. And it happens to be usually the same people, and those sort of people. It does data suggest that they sort of end up. A lot of them end up in relationships together and end up having these bilateral violent fights. And there's lots of potential reasons for that about the way, I think it's to do with the way that they're brought up and the way they're learned to cope with confrontation and, you know, it's reciprocation of their childhood. And there's lots of other reasons, you know, and it's very hard in these broad things to talk about it, but it's a psychological problem is what I'm getting at. It's not a cultural issue. It is a group of people who have been conditioned to behave like that and have issues with violence, and that's how they see to resolve things. And so when we flip that sort of thought pattern into the idea of rape culture, in that it's a psychological problem, which makes more sense, because even if we talk about the 25% of women have been sexually assaulted, if we say that's a pretty common statistic we see, what people seem, I think, make a lot of mistakes is they assume then that's like a 1-for-1 ratio and 25% of men would therefore be committing assaults. But I don't think it makes sense that one person commits one assault. I think it's much more likely to see more commonality of serial offenders.
I think Trump is committing every single one of those assaults.
Yeah,
Trump and Bill Cosby.
Yeah.
Exactly, but these are great examples where these guys are not accused of doing it once. They're accused of doing it hundreds of times.
Right.
And you know, and all these different cases.
That children star you were mentioning,
yeah, Jimmy
in the UK.
Savile is the UK example. He literally ran a paedophile ring and had a bunch of other serial paedophiles that he used, were all DJs and celebrities and chief of police. Like, it's just disgusting when you look into what happened in the 70s in Britain. It really gross. But the point is, like, there's a lot of serial behavior here. And as we said before, like, this is, like, to me, this looks like a psychological problem. It doesn't really make sense to suggest it's a cultural problem, except for the fact that that is, it sounds plausible, and it suits people's agendas to say it is.
So you don't think there's a rape culture?
I think it's more that there is, because for it to be a rape culture, it would have to be advocated by a majority of people, even in implicitly, if not explicitly. And I don't think you can make an argument for that. I don't see, as we've just said, majority of men don't think that this is okay, but, and don't talk like this, and don't think this is okay.
But how can you say with confidence the majority of men? Because, like, it really depends, like, where you grow up, how you grow up, the type of people you surround yourself with. Because, like, growing up, hearing my brother and his friends talk, hearing some of the guys I was friends with, not for very long, mind you, talk, like, this was very pervasive, the way that they talk negatively about women. And
yeah,
then
but
I
also,
don't see...
We're also talking about teenagers, are we? Or are we talking about adults?
Teenagers, but no. But then, like, going on into 20s and, yeah, I mean, I don't have regular kind of... But yeah, no, but I think, like, yeah, you were saying the older generation, for sure, there's more of an idea of this sexism that's pretty pervasive. But I think in a younger generation, too, less the kind of less educated, more, I don't know quite how to put it, but I do notice a lot of it. And it's hard to make a statistic about the majority of culture when we all kind of live in vacuums and have different experiences.
But to suggest it's a culturally... force thing, you have to show evidence of it being advocated or, you know, accepted or, you know, the only thing you could argue is that it isn't dealt with properly, which is absolutely true. But that is not to do with the fact that it's advocated. That's to do with the fact that schools, like universities, like UBC, don't want it to be on basically reflected on them and what they've done and their image. That's what it comes down to. It's nothing to do with them advocating it. And with the police, I can't speak for the police sort of protocol on that and why it's so shit, but it seems to be getting better because they're starting to now like have dedicated sexual assault divisions and things like that, where you have people that properly train with how to deal with victims. And there are steps that are going forward to make coming forward with this sort of stuff less traumatic. I would never deny that. I just think that the problem is if we think it's a rape culture and we talk about it being a rape culture and that isn't what it actually is, and that's just it, make you know, the data doesn't actually support that, that's just an, you know, a sort of idea that sounds good and we go along with it. What happens then is, how do you don't actually solve the problem correctly then, because you're attacking it and that isn't actually what the problem is.
I agree. I think that makes a lot of sense. But how can data show you what the culture and what the mentality of each individual that forms a society is?
Mind you, culture changes. So culture is not static. Culture is always changing.
Right.
So this conversation that it was mainly between you two for the moment, it was really interesting because you can't prove it either way. It's impossible without the data. And the data you need is you'd have to have, like, literally line everyone up and have them like on polygraphs that actually work, and ask.
You don't need to do that. What you need to do,
but anecdotal evidence, you can't.
Not anecdotal evidence. Absolutely.
What we've just kind of given. Like, I've never heard that. I've never been in a situation that is basically anecdotal evidence.
But what I'm saying is, you can get real evidence because you can. You know, a lot of it is basically taking sample data of like. Basically, a lot of it would have to be self-reporting, but you would self-report your basically attitudes, and you ask questions that are sort of indirectly sort of give up your attitudes and stuff is how you would do that. And I'm sure there are attempts, and we need to look more into this. But interestingly, my sort of line of reasoning, as I say, I'm not 100% sold on this, but I think it makes a lot of sense, and I think that it's important enough issue that it's worth talking about it. That, you know, this is stuff that people should be looking into, and it's worth saying it, because otherwise, as I say, if we're going down the wrong tunnel in terms of solving these sort of problems, then we're actually doing a disservice to people. And there actually is one survivors group in America. I can't think on top of my head. I can't remember what they were called. But I was having this discussion with someone else, and they brought it up. And they actually, like, this is their same argument, that if, you know, it isn't a cultural problem, it's a psychological problem when you have, you know, 10 to 15% of men who think it's okay to rape women and carry out rapes. And, you know, they are the problem, but they're not the people who are going to give a shit when you talk to them about rape culture and about how you should respect women and stuff, because that's not how they think, and they don't give a shit. Then, you know, what the social norm is doesn't matter to them.
But I would argue that there's the psychological, for sure. I think you're coming from a good point there. There's that weird percentage of people who think it's all right, but I think that there's the cultural level of people, the friends that they joke around with that don't kind of call them out on it, that go along with the joke, even if they deep down inside don't believe it. Like, there's a huge kind of line of thinking. It's, I think it was like a backlash to a lot of women saying that, like, oh, you know, men are rapists, like this hyper violent kind of belief about like anti-men. And they're like, okay, no, not all men are rapists. And then it's like, oh, but you all kind of like sit around there and are okay with these types of jokes. But then it's, no, I...
But
just, like,
I joke
friend...
about murder. I don't think murder's okay.
Yeah, but there's the culture that of people that support the kind of the people who are messed up in their head will make these jokes, and then the people around them don't call them out on it, so that idea is perpetuated that it's okay for them to make those types of jokes.
But Simon's point was already being, though, that if you explain to them, they're gonna go, oh cool, yeah, sorry man, whatever. But in their head, the way that their synapses connect isn't actually gonna, desensitized to I guess interpersonal experiences, and perhaps really into anything that's perhaps like psychopaths,
but,
really.
But I think you can also can make jokes without you can make jokes you can make a joke about murder without believing murder's okay.
Oh,
so
totally. No,
you can make a joke about rape. It's not very tasteful and they're usually not very funny, and it's very hard to make a very good rape joke. And I'm saying this in all seriousness as a comedian, like, you know, you write jokes about everything, and so you may try to write a joke about that, but yeah, it's very hard to write a clever joke about that because it's not a very funny subject. And it's, you know, but dark, you know, comedy comes from dark places. It does,
right? But just up to Connor's point about the idea, it's like, oh, you know, you can explain it to them, but they still won't get it. What about those other ideas where people have very limited beliefs on, say, things like LGBTQ culture, or they're a little bit racist, and you can explain things to people, and over time, kind of, you can help shift their beliefs? Why is it not that you can help shift people's beliefs away from these kind of very negative attitudes toward women?
But do you, or do you just get them to stop saying their racist beliefs?
Well, can you not think of it, like, obviously people change, people's beliefs evolve as they're exposed to new institutions, new ways of life, new people.
Right, but it's usually the experience of actually being with, you know, exposed to people of different cultures and being experienced to people and having their preconceptions challenged. It's not usually through, as much through dialogue that I think a lot of people have those changes. But you're right, you can have, of course you can learn things through dialogue, but that's something that happens only if you go out of your way to sort of open your mind up. You know, someone, you know, usually if they've proven it time and time again, if you have strong beliefs and you have get a bunch of people in the room with similar strong beliefs and you try and have an argument with a bunch of other people, you become more polarized. You actually go further away from the center. You actually lack even more understanding of what's going on. You know, and I'm not just, it's, we're not trying to paint it as, like there's nothing you can do about the fact there's a bunch of people that, you know, of course there has to be ways that we move towards, but that's the thing. If we see it as this sort of problem, it's a totally different concept of how we approach it than if we see it as a cultural problem.
Right.
This is why it's so key that we decide what it is and we actually get the data to prove it. Because if we just keep creating up, because it's dogmatism, you're creating a plan for something based on this, you know, sort of sand-based foundations. Like, it's not built on solid ground. And that's, and I think because it just, it's a narrative that's been created and it sounds right, so we've gone with it. And it's not been, sociology, for a lot of the time, it isn't done very scientifically. And it's something we have to be really careful of, because especially if it's stuff that's perpetuated in the media, because media sells. And it, especially if it's stuff directed towards, you know, a particular group and it's about them. And that's, you know, what a lot of, you know, there's a lot of media specific to women, a lot of magazines and a lot of websites that is, you know, written for their interests.
And especially with the, and in the best way possible, the increasing literacy equality between the genders, certainly in the Western world, that only makes that sort of group more ready to be able to learn things, to apprehend things, to take part in things in a position where they've previously not been allowed to or not felt the courage to as well.
Mm. Yeah. So, yeah, you know, what my point is that we need to get scientific about this.
Now, do you think that what do you think the connection is between the Trump tapes and this idea of the kind of psychological idea of rape being okay?
Well, because I believe that he is, you know, a kind of delusional, and he does see himself as this powerful, better than, you know, he sees himself as this Christ-like figure who can have whatever he wants, whatever he wants.
Right.
And not just, you know, his whole life is about materialism. His whole concept of self is about how many buildings he has with his name on them. His whole self-worth is tied up in how much he's worth. You know, first thing he said when he started running for president is, I'm worth billions of dollars, because
right,
that's how I...
Don't you mean he's worth negative billions of dollars to avoid income tax?
That's how he understands himself. And that's how he understands the world. The world is merely objects that he is allowed to do with what he wants, because he has paid for them with his billions of dollars. And so he sees, you know, I don't even think he just sees women as objects. I think he sees everybody as objects. I think he sees his own children. They're props for his own entertainment. And, you know, they're raised well, but because they're a reflection of him, they are his toys.
And the supermodel wives.
Yeah, like, you know, come on. Like, do you think he's ever had a conversation with anybody that he didn't just want something from?
Or at least want to win, yeah.
Yeah, like, there's the guy wouldn't know... honestly, I don't think he has a single bone in his body that understands any form of empathy or just doing something for somebody without wanting something back. I don't think that is a concept he would ever understand. Yeah. I don't think, I the guy is so self-involved that, if you want me to pick like a list of people who like have the psychological profile for rapists, then it's the same people that would be CEOs because they're sociopaths, and in certain social situations they can remove empathy and do as what they see benefits them and the people that they choose to benefit. It's just, yeah.
That's an interesting transition of the conversation.
Yeah, sorry, not all CEOs. There's okay. some CEOs yeah, that are good people. Back. But the ones that have those sociopath tendencies.
But it is interesting, though, because you do get to the stage where certainly, you know, you can make the argument, you know, words versus actions. And you can say, well, Trump, you know, he talks a big game because he's trying to win, but maybe he hasn't actually, you know, perpetrated some of his actions. But actually, even then, it seems to be there are accusations against him for sexual assault. So
today,
it's not even enough as if he just talks a big game and you think, well, he's just trying to be the alpha male or whatever sort of position you could ascribe him to. Like, it actually seems like, I don't want to state facts or anything, but accusations have come out and stuff like the tapes as well. They do seem to paint the picture of him as someone who not only talks, who acts the way he talks as well. And so that's like makes me incredibly fearful for the potential of him becoming the president of the United States, but also just sort of like anything he says and how that applies to the real world. Like, I mean, just between him and another person, if he's talking so aggressively like that, and he has a history of kind of like, I don't say falling through, but certainly a unity of action speech, then I'd be worried about what that person would be sort of subjected to. And so I think, Simon, I think you paint a good picture. I would, yeah, judge on what he said and done. I think I would also paint him as the kind of person who, requires extra attention sort of psychologically.
Yeah. All right, guys. That's 10 o'clock, 10:04.
Sorry if you like music.
Yeah, we didn't really do the music.
We had some killer tracks too.
We'll play a couple as we leave now that are pretty killer for your listening pleasure. But yeah, any last thoughts on this subject? I know we've covered quite a lot. Yeah.
I have so many thoughts.
I know. It's a lot to talk about. Yeah, and that wasn't even really what I intended to talk about tonight, but we went off on that train. One thing I do want to say is, because I think this is interesting, and this is about UBC, which is that this whole sort of line of reasoning and thought came from a conversation I had with a friend of mine who took his own research, which was part to do with this. And I sort of added my own thoughts on the sort of comparisons with intimate partner violence research and the parallels there. But he most of the other stuff I was talking about was stuff I got from his research. And he actually went to the UBC newspaper. The UBC?
Is that UBC, what we, I think.
The UBC. It's spelled like UBYSSEY. We've all seen it.
Yes.
He went there a couple of weeks ago and said, "You guys, your paper sucks. It's boring. Can we write some better articles? Like, can I write?" And they were like, "Yeah, do it." He's like, "I want to make it kind of Vice, you know." I'm like, and yeah, I was like, "That sounds great idea." Like, I was backing him up too. Do it, man. So he went back in there last week and basically started trying to explain to them how, this same argument I just basically gave about how, the rape culture, idea of rape culture is missing the point of what actually causes rape. And he got literally kicked out of the UBC paper office by a group of angry people who told him to get the hell out, and his ideas weren't wanted there, and there was no room for his thoughts.
Damn, that starts such an interesting tangent right there.
Yeah, so, that's why the paper's boring, if anybody was wondering. They don't want to know. Are they worried about, are they that worried about what people will say that they can't even publish like a thought piece like that? Or what do you think their reasoning even was there? Like, it's just straight, like, it seemed like they just didn't want to know at all.
I think it has to keep up with the UBC agenda of very kind of because of the legacy of the sexual assaults in 2013 and the crazy process that's followed that. I think there has to be a very kind of strong like anti-rape culture, but accepting the idea of rape culture because of the physical evidence of it in like very present in Vancouver.
Yeah.
And so they kind of have to follow this agenda of, you know, we oppose this and we recognize that it's here because we want to be writing on behalf of these victims and we want to assert them that their experience is valid and that
But it's, yeah, I mean, to me, it just seems so bizarre to not be able to at least have the conversation. Because if you position it as, are we approaching solving rape on campus in the right way? If that was how we talked about it. But the fact that we can't even have the conversation, I think, is a detriment to the problem.
Because, I mean, you know, best case scenario, in one way, here's a good point, and there's further research that's done towards it, and actually, you know, results, hopefully over time, data shows actually this helps to minimize the number of sexual assaults. Worst case scenario, you just reinforce the idea that the rape culture argument is the predominant one that has a lot of merit, and you go, well, good thing we're on the right path then.
Yeah.
So there's not a lot to lose,
yeah,
really.
That's, that, you know, if unless they're that afraid of it not being the truth, which is really weird because it doesn't necessarily, you know, it seems odd to hang on to that if it's
it would honestly make the paper more, like, people would read it more. I see loads of them out there in the pile.
Yeah,
and there's always loads
it?
Of them. There's never a straight paper you can't have.
Yeah.
So I think, you know, they would go flying off the shelves.
And not to keep slagging off the newspaper, but I got to say, if anyone can bring me a cartoon, they print a cartoon on the back page.
There's usually two cartoon shows.
Yeah. So if anyone can bring me one that's actually funny, I will give them $50.
Simon, why don't you write some? I bet it's not easy.
Yeah, but, you know.
I figure the drawing takes more time than writing.
Don't do it if you can't. Don't try if you can't do it. Or at least try in the privacy of your own home. Stop publishing them for wasting
It'd
my time.
It'd almost be like writing an episode or something like right before you do to record it or something. You know, it'd be that silly, you know. Just give yourself the time to perfect it, etc.
Yeah. All right. I think we should end it then. Stop taking a piss out of my editing. All right. We'll be back next week with maybe... I'm actually got a plan. I haven't even discussed it with these pair yet, but might be something a little special next week just for fun. But hopefully we'll be back
episode,
then.
Is it?
No, not the naked. We are. Did you hear we're getting webcams in the studios?
I heard something like that, yeah.
Yeah, so there might be a naked episode at some point.
Little do you know, every episode has been naked, but because it's the radio, you can't tell.
But yes, and if you missed any of the show tonight, you can check it out on the podcast at citr.ca. And keep up with us on Twitter and Facebook at White Noise UBC. Otherwise, we'll see you very soon. And this is Tons.
Thanks, guys.
Good night.
What I'm saying sound, is it safe to leave?